Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Psychedelics Today. This is your host, Joe Moore, and this will be a little bit of a short episode. We had a little bit of a planning mishap and just don't have too many episodes ready, so I'm recording this the night of March 18 for release on the 19th, so hopefully that's okay. So I do have some things to chat about, though. Before we dig in, if you want to check out our store, we got a few things for sale, psychedelicstodayshop.com. We are offering some special editions of the Navigating Psychedelics course. We have two editions for sale right now, and there's a third extra special edition coming up for doctors. Not for sale yet, but soon. One is for kind of a more general audience. The other one is for clinicians and therapists, so anybody working in medicine or a therapist that would be suited to. We're going to have some special guests help teach that with us, and I think you're going to like it. It comes with print copies of our two most recent books that you can find on Amazon. Just search Psychedelics Today. You'll find them there, the Trip Journal and Integration Workbook. So good stuff. Check that out. We'd love to have you join us for the classes, and think they're going to be really special. So you get all the main course content, plus I think we're doing 5 different online meetups. And it's mainly just to get really, you know, into the content, making sure you understand it, working closely with us so you do get confirmation that it works for you and stuff like that. So without further ado, let's dig in. So I think the biggest news in the last week or so since our esketamine episode is that the psychedelic icon Ralph Metzner has just passed away on March 14th, so 4 days ago or so. Ralph was part of the Leary-Alpert trio, so part of that little Harvard club was there for the Good Friday experiment in Harvard, and he went on to have a really remarkable career. In my opinion, produced a ton of books and really did some interesting stuff. Very different path from a lot of folks. But I think he's going to be well remembered because he put so much of his thoughts down. It was very, very honest in his exploration. So I'll read you the title of a few of the books he worked on. So the first book in his bibliography here is The Psychedelic Experience, a manual based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which was really a huge book for the psychedelic movement. It came out in 1963, so the concept was using the Tibetan Book of the Dead for a template for your LSD journey. So the model the Tibetans came up with worked really well for the psychedelic experience, long and short. It's worth checking out. It's not that big of a book. Next book was on the I Ching. Some of the other ones on The Unfolding Self, Green Psychology, Sacred Mushroom of Visions, The Sacred Vine of Spirits, The Expansion of Consciousness, Alchemical Divination, Ecology of Consciousness, Overtones and Undercurrents, Searching for the Philosopher's Stone. That book in particular, that was on my desk when I got word that he passed. I had been reading it, actually. So that was quite the coincidence. And I'm told, actually, his 2013 book, Toad and the Jaguar, A Field Report of Underground Research on a Visionary Medicine, Bufo alvarius and 5-methoxy-dimethyltryptamine. I'm told that is one of the best books you can read on 5-MeO-DMT. So if you're interested in that subject, check it out. Again, Toad and the Jaguar by Ralph Metzner. So from Wikipedia here, Ralph was a German-born American psychologist, writer, and researcher who participated in psychedelic research at Harvard in the 60s with Leary and Alpert. Metzner was a psychotherapist and a professor emeritus of psychology at California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco, where he was formerly the academic dean and academic vice president. Metzner was involved in consciousness research, including psychedelics, yoga, meditation, and shamanism for over 50 years. He was a co-founder and president of the Green Earth Foundation, a nonprofit educational organization devoted to healing and harmonizing the relationship between humans and the earth, and a signatory to the 9/11 Truth Statement. Metzner was featured in the 2006 film Entheogen, Awakening the Divine Within, a documentary about rediscovering an enchanted cosmos in the modern world. He conducted workshops on consciousness transformation and alchemical divination, both nationally and internationally. He was a poet and singer, songwriter, and produced two CDs with Kit Walker, a spoken word CD, and one music CD of original songs called the Bardo Blues. He received his PhD in psychology from Harvard. So, you know, really prolific guy. He influenced a lot more people than you might think. Very worth checking out his books. I really have been enjoying Searching for the Philosopher's Stone, so definitely check that one out. I'm really excited about Ecology of Consciousness as well. In some ways, I feel like he's extended the alchemical tradition quite a bit in some interesting ways. So very, very worth digging into if you're not too familiar with Ralph. So thank you, Ralph. I do appreciate your work, and I wish we had the chance to connect and while you're still here with us. So on to the next thing. Again, everybody do check that out. So an interesting thing here. A new study came out not that long ago. The conclusion, you know, the science writer headline: a single dose of psilocybin enhances creative thinking and empathy up to 7 days after use. So this study came out in the Journal of Psychoactive Drugs, and the author, Natasha Mason, N.L. Mason at Twitter. A PhD candidate at Maastricht University, which is interesting. There's some good stuff going on there. Malin Utaug, who just joined our advisory board, is at that school as well. Here's a quote. The focus of such investigations has been on psychedelics' capacity to reduce symptoms of these disorders, thereby improving mood and well-being. However, of equal importance are the higher order cognitive processes that may be enhanced, or that may play a role in symptom alleviation of the disorders. Examples of processes that have been found to be decreased in these pathologies include creativity, flexible thinking, and empathy. Specifically, individuals are characterized by repetitive and rigid patterns of negative and compulsive thoughts, as well as reduced empathic abilities. Thus, we wanted to assess whether psilocybin enhanced these processes, and if so, how long effects lasted. Furthermore, we wanted to see whether enhancement in creativity or empathy correlated with participants' ratings of subjective well-being. So this is a 55-participant study using retreat participants from the Psychedelic Society in the Netherlands. I think that's a UK group. So they took the survey 7 days after ingesting the psilocybin. Scrolling to the end here. The study was a naturalistic study assessing effects of psilocybin in volunteers who chose to attend a psychedelic retreat. Thus, there's, you know, a problem with selection, but, you know, that's just a limitation based on legality of this stuff. Once legality gets straightened out, we'll have a lot more tightly controlled research. And, you know, people got to go easy on these researchers. They're doing their best. We have a really tough legal situation, and as a result, we have trouble doing research. So hopefully that gets straightened out. Future placebo-controlled experimental studies could ideally control for these potential influences, as well as assess the role of cognitive processes in symptom alleviation in pathological populations. So check it out. The study is called Subacute Effects of Psilocybin on Empathy, Creative Thinking, and Subjective Well-Being. Natasha Mason, Elizabeth Mischler, Malin V. Utaug, oh, I didn't realize she was on that, and Kim P.C. Kuipers. So thank you all. It was a really, really cool study. Got a lot of press. It's awesome to see your names all over the place there. So yes, there is a good chance that psilocybin does help with creative thinking, at least up to 7 days, because that was the period for study. New news from today, the 18th, activists plan initiative to decriminalize psychedelic drugs in Oakland. So there's a new Oakland, California, right next to San Francisco. So decriminalize nature, Oakland, restoring our roots. So there's a whole bunch of folks putting this thing on. It looks like it's a multi-day event, but March 22, they're doing a big thing. And it's pretty good. Some people you may or may not know, I didn't think the names were too big, but check it out, Decriminalize Nature. I think Erie is working with them a little bit. I've seen a lot of their memes get popped up here and there, but it's just decriminalizenature.org. And I'm glad to see this trend moving forward. Denver, many of you probably know that Denver, City and County of Denver, which is really just the city of Denver, is voting on decriminalizing mushrooms, quantities of mushrooms. If you have a pound, you're probably still in big trouble. But if you only have a couple eighths or something, you're probably okay. So that's going to be voted on in a month or two, maybe May. In Denver, and there's an Oregon initiative. I think there's a California-wide initiative, but that might be a little fringe. I don't really know where that one stands. But Denver's the one I'm most familiar with, and I'm glad to see this trend is moving. I would prefer to see, you know, this is my bias. You know, everybody's welcome to have their own opinion, but one drug at a time doesn't seem like an effective approach. I think the Drug Policy Alliance position on, you know, drugs across the board, you know, just ending the drug war in general, you know, and we have to be conscious of our biases towards certain drugs. Like, should a meth user go to jail? Really? Like, when we can do acid? Like, I don't know if that's really the best in the best interest of the future. I think we just need to have a more compassionate drug policy, model it after, you know, what we think is most ethical, like really breaking up families for drug abuse and addiction and many other situations. It just really isn't that great. I think it's not ethical to put people in cages for nonviolent offenses regardless. So, you know, place me where you will in your political hierarchy, but I just don't think it's right. So let's potentially broaden our scope, and we might be able to get more support by using coalitions, but I do applaud everybody for their work. So thank you, Decriminalize Denver, decriminalizenature.org in Oakland, and the folks in Oregon doing their work too. It's great stuff. So thank you all for that. And another article is probably something we don't want to hear about, but people who want to do violence will take it, do whatever they need to do to do it. So from Marines Times, MarinesCorpsTimes.com, you know, can LSD and magic mushrooms help win wars? This Marine officer says yes. This is an article from March 11. So it looks like people are looking at, even in the military, looking at you know, microdosing or use of psychedelics to be able to do war more effectively. So that's a really interesting thing. They're citing articles from The Lancet, and, you know, and they're even citing that a poll here, Military Times, 1,400 Military Times readers, responded to the survey about should soldiers get or veterans get access to MDMA. 87% said yes, they were in favor of this. So, you know, it's not a really radical idea. You know, I think just based on the stigma, it seems really crazy, but it's not really that crazy of an idea to help people out, especially when they're sick and hurting and coming back to our country and, you know, they need help. So, you know, not that crazy of an idea. And of course, people in the military are looking at this. They look at everything. So, you know, if they didn't, outcomes would be a lot different. And to think that the military is not using drugs is crazy too. There's a lot of LSD use in the military. There's a lot of modafinil, Provigil use, lot of stimulant use, like amphetamines, I think, are used pretty regularly. And often military doctors tell soldiers to pick up smoking. Just quote unquote calms their nerves. Perhaps do no harm, but you're a military doctor, so it's tough. It's hard math. I don't want to say what's right or wrong here. I know it's a really complicated subject. So that's all I wanted to say, is that there was an article on a military website about LSD and MDMA and psychedelics in general in relation to the military. So you can find a link to that article if you want to check that out in the show notes. One rant I wanted to go on. I talked to a friend of the show today, and we were talking about like harm reduction, kind of how conservative I am around drugs and talking about drugs. We chatted a little bit about how in ayahuasca circles, sometimes there's mold on ayahuasca that is kind of just glossed over. Like the ayahuasca has like a, you know, fermented at room temperature because it's in some particular cultures, it's violent to freeze or refrigerate ayahuasca. And they want to, you know, make it once and keep it around for a while. It's pretty labor intensive, so you don't want to make a new batch every time, theoretically. So the problem being is that there's a mold on this thing you're going to ingest. And what does that mold have in it? What is that mold? Are there toxins that mold produces and then excretes into the ayahuasca, leaving you more sick than you need to be? Perhaps. So mycotoxins happen. There is toxicity from this. It doesn't boil off. It's not alive. It's an excreted toxin. And yes, you can kill the mold by scraping it off and boiling it, but the mold is a mold, but the mold excretes. It eats and it excretes, just like all living things. So it's possibly problematic. We don't know. So I kind of was like, you know, it's probably fine. They've been doing it for 100 years. And he says, I don't know. Like, if you have the option to be more safe, should you be? And I said, you know, that's a really valid point. And it started extending to me into global harm reduction work. And if we have less harms and less deaths in the drug world over time, by perhaps us being just slightly more cautious for a while in the psychedelic world, probably just another 5 years or 6 years, we're going to see huge benefits from this. And it extended it. I extended that thought into what Mitch Gomez is doing with Dance Safe. You know, him and his whole team are doing tremendous amounts of work to do harm reduction education all over at least the U.S., if not internationally as well. There's plenty of organizations doing this work. And I said, you know, they're right. It's not just about people dying and getting hurt. It's about future people also dying and getting hurt needlessly when we could do drug checking and, teaching each other, you know, what are safe interactions, what are dangerous interactions, what not to do to stay alive, stay out of jail, stay out of hospitals, in the grave. All those things have huge long-term benefits to future people. You know, if we die less, if we get hurt less, there's less data to prove that these things are harmful and that our practices are relatively safe. Like, let's clean up our act. Let's get it together and really move these things forward. I think by being safer with drugs, we're going to really influence policy, show, hey, look, I've been a drug user for 70 years. I'm fine. I'm actually healthier than most of my peers at age 88. Look at me. So, you know, perhaps something to think about. If you have the option to be safer, should you be? Yes, I think so. I think it's not just the best move for you and your family. It's the best move for you and future culture. We don't want to see people keep going to jail because of perceived danger. We want to know that our ecstasy doesn't have fentanyl in it. Same with LSD. LSD blotter, what we would assume is LSD blotter, sometimes contains fentanyl. So we have to be a little more concerned. you know, we don't know why that's happening exactly. We have some easy suspicions. There's some more difficult suspicions, but largely it's just a somewhat contaminated drug supply. And part of the reason for that contaminated drug supply is prohibition. Probably the biggest reason for that is prohibition. If we could have safe access to this without fear of going to jail for the rest of our lives, then there's no reason for, you know, risky criminals to mix the supply or even have this stuff in the same room as fentanyl. There's no real reason for that. So food for thought. I think it's a big deal and it's something we should stay on top of. I'm, you know, happy to debate that. If you want to debate more publicly, we can. We have this Facebook group, just Psychedelics Today group on Facebook. We have, I think, 1,300 people up there. And it's a really great time. We get to chat about lots of stuff and can share information, articles, ask questions, and, you know, have some debates. Please keep it civil if you choose to join us there. But we'd love to have you. It's a really cool group. What else is going on? I think that's probably, for the most part, it. But again, I wanted to give you the opportunity to help us out a little bit so we can, you know, bring you full episodes more often, as often as possible. Hopefully, I would love to do way more episodes than I do. It would probably be obnoxious to many of you, but I would love to do it. So, if you want to support us, there's a lot of ways. Jump on our email list. You can. To do that, there's a lot of ways. You could just go to our website. You could sign up for one of our free classes at psychedelicstoday.teachable.com. We've got shirts for sale, mugs, stickers, ebooks at psychedelicstodayshop.com. If you want to order some hard copies of our books, the Trip Journal and Integration Workbook, scoop those up at Amazon. Just search Psychedelics Today on Amazon. You'll find it. What else? Oh, yes. Yes. The most important thing. The most important thing we have going on is the Navigating Psychedelics live courses. They launch in mid-May and 5 sessions each. There's a general track. There's a therapist track, therapist/clinicians track. So anybody can really join that one. But we're going to be speaking from a therapist point of view. And there's a special one. Stay tuned with physicians. So progressively higher in price on those. And what you get is 5 live Zooms with peers, Kyle and I, hopefully on all of them. Check out the individual pages for the schedules. I'm going to try to make as many as I can. Kyle's going to be there for all of them. And we're going to have a doctor help us out. Dr. Matt Brown agreed to join us on the physician track, which is going to be amazing. And it's going to be such a cool time. We really can't wait to share it. Limited seats, 10 total seats in each course. We sold out quickly on our last one. And we hope you all want to join us and hang out. And really excited to get to know you all. So again, tell your friends about this stuff. Subscribe to the show. Join us on Facebook. And yeah, we'll see you on the next episode. This is Joe Moore signing off from Brookridge, Colorado. Bye-bye.